This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome to Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Paff alongside Reggie Rizzou once again. On today's episode, the rubber duck that shows up 400 miles away. The rare Lego piece that sank to the bottom of the sea is found after 27 years. Plus, on this day in history, the ancestor of the trolley takes to the streets in Berlin. Yes, there is an ancestor to the trolley. That's all coming up on Cool Stuff. Let us take you back. 18 years to be exact. It's 2006 and we're in Dublin, Ireland for the World Duck Race Ireland, which pitted 150,000 rubber ducks against each other in a race meant to take the ducks 1 kilometer down the River Liffey and under 5 bridges. If you're wondering, why? Well, each duck in the race was sponsored for charity, with the first duck to pass under said 5 bridges being declared the winner. And the winning sponsor was awarded a trip to the United States. But several ducks broke free of the river that day and made their way into the sea. This despite the organizers' best attempts to prevent it. Now fast forward to 2024, and one duck has been found nearly 650 kilometers away on the island of Stronsay in the Orkney Archipelago in Scotland. That's a touch over 400 miles for those of us in the United States. Philip Miller, 13 years old, stumbled upon the rubber duck while walking his dog and decided to bring it home to show his mom. And per his mom, quote, he didn't really look at it. He just put it in his pocket. I had to look at it and saw the writing. It said World Record Duck Race, Ireland, 2006. And so we got a bit excited and started Googling it, end quote. Now, if you're wondering how they knew what to Google, Marion also pointed out that the writing on the duck was still fully intact. The link in the show notes today has a photo, as we said, the words World Duck Race in Ireland 2006, along with the website for Children's Lifeline, all fully visible there. You can also see the duck's assigned number intended to identify that particular sponsor of said duck, almost like a serial number, if you will. Now, as the find was posted on social media, commenters began wondering about the future of the duck, but Marion says there's no chance she's throwing it out. Quote, I don't think we'll keep him in the bath, but we're definitely going to keep it on the shelf, end quote. Other escaped ducks from the race that day have been found in Morecambe, that's a seaside town in England, and the Isle of Wight. The latter duck would have had to make its way through the Celtic Sea and up the English Channel to arrive at its final destination. But perhaps the most impressive path traveled belongs to a duck discovered in Sweden in 2016. That duck has seen some things, you have to believe, out on the open sea. Boldly going where no rubber duck has gone before.
I mean, it's nice to see that this isn't one of those things in England or, you know, remember we talked about where it has to be worth a certain value and you have to turn it in, otherwise you can get in trouble. Clearly, the rubber duck is not at that level.
Yeah, the rubber duck from 06 does not meet the government's definition of treasure. So, yeah, this one can stick around. But I guess at the same time, there aren't going to be any viable buyers for this particular piece. You either like it and you set it on the mantle, or you scrap it and throw it in the junk, which I could see either being a viable option here.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to sit on the mantle for a little bit. And then at some point during a move or during cleanup, it's going to be, why do we still have this? And it'll get tossed or whatever.
Well, now, I mean, the most interesting part of this story to me is how these ducks that were discovered in other locations made their way there, particularly Sweden, because you'd have to take a pretty circuitous route to wind up all the way over in Sweden coming from Ireland. And like I said at the end of the story, that duck's clearly seen some things out on the open water, probably survived some storms, a lot of different things over the course of 18 years.
I wonder if any animals tried to attack it and eat it in any way and got spit up or who knows what it's gone through. All I know, it's been through more traveling than some people I know.
Absolutely.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Sticking with the theme of rare finds, a rare Lego piece that fell into the sea back in 1997 has been found by a 13-year-old boy in Cornwall. Per Sky News, Litaris Semilanskis had been hoping to find a holy grail plastic octopus for 2 years in his hunt for pieces of Lego that famously fell into the sea back in 1997 when a cargo ship encountered a bad storm. Now, among the Lego pieces that fell into the sea that day were 352,000 pairs of flippers, 97,500 scuba tanks, and 92,400 swords. But octopuses are the most prized object, as only 4,200 were aboard the ship that day.
I find it fitting, of all the things that did fall into the ocean, were flippers, scuba tanks, octopuses. It seems to work, right?
It does. Swords might be the only thing that really don't belong down there, unless you're Poseidon, but pretty sure he used
Or a pirate.
That's right. Fair enough. Litaris found the piece on a beach in the town of Marazion, but he said he's regularly visiting local beaches with his parents and has amassed 789 Lego pieces over the course of 2 years, as well as numerous fossils. We hear about that often coming out of the UK. Now, per his father, Vitatis, quote, "We've been looking for that octopus for 2 years. It's not easy to find. We were not expecting to find it at all because it's very rare," end quote. Might also throw in there because it's at the bottom of the ocean. Beachcomber Tracy Williams is behind the Lego Lost at Sea project, which has spent years trying to find these plastic pieces since they spilled into the ocean. She said she found one octopus back in 97 and didn't recover another one for 18 years. Quote, "I think there's something quite magical about the octopuses. They're often seen as the holy grail of finds from the shipping container," end quote. What's equally crazy, Williams says a second Lego octopus was found just 2 days after Litaris's discovery, this time in the English town of Portlevin. Quote, "I think that's because we had a very high spring tide coupled with strong onshore winds. And when the two collide, the waves eat into the dunes that then release a lot of the plastic that has washed up," end quote. Williams has been working on research related to the cargo spill and wrote a book, in fact, called Adrift: The Curious Tale of the Lego Lost at Sea. Quote, "I'm recording where it all washes up, so we're working on a map that will form part of the scientific paper to show how far plastic from a cargo spill drifts and what happens to it over time. What we'd like to find out is whether those containers still exist or whether they've long since rusted away," end quote. She added, quote, "I mean, it's intriguing to know what's happened to all the rest of the Lego that we've never seen. There are so many cargoes spilled every year, but you very rarely hear what happens to the goods inside. And what we know from the Lego story is that 27-year-old plastic that was inside that shipping container is still being found," end quote. Reggie, you're a parent, so I'll ask you this to get started. If either of your kids had taken an interest in finding a piece like this that fell to the bottom of the sea 25-odd years ago plus, how might you go about helping them locate it? Would you go about helping them try to find one?
I'm not a strong swimmer in any way, so I'm definitely not going in the water. So the answer is I probably would say, "I'm busy this weekend, kids. We can't do it this weekend either. I'm sorry. I got things to do."
This weekend and the subsequent 700 plus weekends until you're an adult and can take scuba lessons for yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll let them wait for it on their own. As for the Lego piece that was found, the octopus, it seems like more and more are showing up. If I was that kid, I would sell it as quick as possible while they're still pretty rare. And hopefully you make some money off it instead of waiting for more and more of them to get into the market.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you are looking to make a little cash off this, although 13-year-old boy, he might be looking to just add to his collection at this point. We'll see what his parents ultimately advise him to do. I'd never heard about this cargo ship. Now, it could be because it happened so long ago that I just don't remember that happening, and certainly didn't happen here in the U.S., but it's pretty wild to think about, and it does make me wonder what else was on board of that ship, or was it strictly carrying all sorts of Legos?
I hope I had more than just Legos. That's a lot of Legos if it's just carrying that. I mean, it seems like you should have more than that, because Lego pieces aren't very big either. You could do that on a tugboat. You don't need a cargo ship to carry Lego pieces.
Since 1997, fish and other sea-dwelling creatures have been saying ow every time they step on a Lego piece at the bottom of the sea. That's a terrible joke.
The Little Mermaid's probably loving this, finding all of those little things she can collect.
Just think, if you went scuba diving and you found all the pieces assembled at the bottom of the sea, how creepy would that be?
Got a whole little village built up. I found Atlantis, the Lego version.
It is interesting, though. You wonder, okay, so where exactly did it sink? Why wasn't there a professional recovery effort at the time to try to bring some of this back? Was it just not worth it? Perhaps that's the answer. Not sure, but interesting.
I would think it's probably not worth it. You're talking pennies, dollars for those Lego pieces. Is it really worth it? You could probably make them cheaper than the recovery.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. Although, as Williams pointed out there at the end, she's doing research on this. It does make you wonder, all this plastic and God knows what else was aboard that cargo ship winding up in the sea. I wouldn't think that would be a good thing overall for sea life.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
Looking at this day in history, the Elektromote took to the streets of Berlin on April 29th, 1882. The Elektromote was technically the world's first trolleybus and was invented by Werner von Siemens. Yes, the same as the Siemens Corporation. At the time, people were still not used to seeing anything that size move without the aid of a horse. However, the Elektromote was only in operation for a short time, April 29th until June 13th in 1882, and traveled 540 meters at an average speed of 12 kilometers per hour, and it started at the railroad station in Berlin. I'm keeping it in meters and kilometers there just because, you know, it's Berlin. I'm not going to do all that conversion data for you. Drivers could determine the direction for the vehicle because they had a steering mechanism on the front axle. However, it couldn't move much as they had to stay by the lines overhead. Now, this wasn't the first attempt to move an object with electricity. The first used electrified tracks instead of the overhead wires. This caused some issues, though, as it would electrify anything that stepped on the track. Several dogs and cats were killed due to this process, and humans were hurt as well. Plus, it could short circuit during the rain. Now, back to the Elektromote. It was a Landau carriage that had two 2.2 kilowatt electric motors that were used to power a chain drive to the back wheels. In order to get the electricity to the car, they had a small eight-wheeled, what they called contact car, that ran along the overhead power lines. It was the English translation of the system that named it trolley, which is what we know it as today. After the demonstration ended on that June 13th, they took apart the test track a week later. Siemens wanted to build a network of these lines in Berlin, but he wasn't allowed to until 1902, part of the reason being the poor roads, which hindered the progress of the trolley. And, you know, they didn't have rubber tires at the time to help with those poor roads. When they did allow it in 1902, it was with the help of engineer Max Schiemann. He helped improve some of the drive technology. So this is the ancestor of the trolley bus that we can now see today in Europe and in some North American cities like San Francisco, Seattle, and Vancouver. So, Marcus, have you ever taken a true trolley? Have you ever been to a city that has one and traveled on one?
I don't think that I have. I've been to San Francisco, never took the trolley. I took the BART while I was there. I mean, it feels like so much public transportation is similar to trolleys these days, and maybe to some extent even based off what they were originally intended to do or how they originally functioned, but no, I have not. I do find it interesting that the original version had a steering mechanism inside, even though you really couldn't do a whole heck of a lot with it. Why?
Yeah,
are these predetermined routes?
Well, you could kind of. I mean, you had to stay within the lines, but it was basically your typical vehicle or whatever you want to say, it was buggy pulled by a horse, and you were just connected to the line. So, I mean, you had to kind of stay in line with the line. There was no track. You kind of drove it. But obviously, like I said, there was limitations. You can't just take a left turn here. You have to follow the overhead wires.
Well, of course, trolleys typically have a lot of different people on them. Was this limited, or who gets to drive when you jump on here?
It was a little bit smaller. I mean, you could hold not dozens of people, but, you know, what, 6, 8? I believe there should be a picture of the first one in the show notes. I have a link to that as well. It's a little bit smaller, but, you know, it was, like I said, the ancestor to the trolley. So they were still building it out, testing it.
And there was no, like, hired driver aboard? You just got on I'm steering?
There should have been a driver that
should. Again, who's fighting for the right to steer this thing and keep it between the lines?
I have a feeling at the time there'd be a lot of people like, I don't want to do it. So I'm not breaking this thing.
It probably would be intimidating, having never seen anything like this, having never been in a car or anything of that nature. So that's pretty funny to think about.
Yeah, and I'm glad we don't have all the electric tracks run around right now. There'd be a lot of dead animals, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of a sad note in all of this. Dogs, cats, and even humans getting injured by the electric tracks that way. No doubt there would be some additional safety precautions put in this day and age.
Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. You can reach us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. You can also like us and leave a review at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'd appreciate it. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Path. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.